Hi, listener. If you have enjoyed listening to All About India Insider Tales and want us to keep going strong and regularly putting out new shows, please consider becoming a patron on patreon.com/allaboutindiapodcast or patreon.com/learnhindiontheGo by making a small monthly donation.
Every dollar helps and allows us to focus solely on bringing you fascinating little known stories about India.
It is episode 12 of our series All About India Insider Tales. My name is Shraddha and here with me are Ritansh and Jaibor. In this episode, we are going to tell you the fascinating tale of the connection between the opium grown in India, Chinese tea export, and how the English acquired Hong Kong.
And if you stay till the end, you can learn a useful Hindi phrase.
You can also listen to the Hindi version of this episode, which includes some Hindi expressions and their uses.
And you can download the Hindi version's transcript as well as the detailed worksheet based on that podcast with more vocabulary from patreon.com/allaboutindiapodcast or patreon.com/learnhindiontheGo.
And to take a free trial for one-to-one online Hindi lessons, visit our school's website. The link is in the episode's description. He sat on the parched earth, his eyes fixed on the withered stalks that were once his hope and pride. He had sown this particular crop, trusting the words of the landlord who had promised him a good price and a steady market. He was given the seeds by the landlord from whom he had borrowed money. The landlord took his land as collateral. The farmer had bought the fertilizers and pesticides, which had cost him more than he could afford. He had done everything he could, but it was not enough. He knew after paying his dues, he would be left with little money to feed his family and his elderly parents until the next crop.
He knew he had no way out. He could not repay the debt, nor could he switch to another crop, nor could he leave the land. He was trapped in a cycle of exploitation and misery from which there was no escape. He cursed himself for being a fool, for falling into the snare of the agent and the landlord. He wished he had never seen the strange crop, nor heard the false promises. He wished he had stayed with his old ways, growing food for his own needs.
But it was too late for regrets. He had made his choice. And he had to face the consequences. Refusing to grow the crop would certainly lead to being kidnapped, arrested, his crop being destroyed, or a criminal prosecution and jail.
He wished he could break free from this bondage, but he saw no way out. He felt like a slave, a prisoner, a victim of a cruel and unjust system. He wondered if there was any hope for him and his family, or if they were destined to perish in this hellish nightmare. He prayed to God for mercy and deliverance, but he heard no answer. He felt alone and helpless in this dark and dismal world.
He was an Indian poppy farmer who had been lured into the opium trade by the false promises of the British agents. The Indian poppy farmer didn't know that the poppy grown by him and other Indian farmers was also the cause of extreme misery and pain for the Chinese people.
The British colonists not only exploited the Indian opium farmers, but caused opium addiction among hundreds of thousands of Chinese. And all this was done by the greedy British colonists just to fill their coffers.
In the late 18th century, the British East India Company started the cultivation of opium into the Indian states of Bengal, Uttar Pradesh and Bihar, which were under their rule. They grew opium to finance tea imported from China.
Chinese tea was introduced to the British in the 17th century and they soon fell in love with this drink, which overtook beer as Britain's favorite brew.
But tea was very expensive then. So, the export of tea was a profitable business for the East India Company. The company would buy the tea from China, which was then the only tea producing country. Then the company would sell the tea in Britain at a very high price.
But the only currency the Chinese would accept in payment was silver, and the Chinese weren't purchasing any British goods in return.
This created a serious balance of payments problem for the British. The problem became almost unmanageable with English resources depleted due to the Anglo-Dutch Wars. As a result of this, the English were unable to afford the silver that China demanded for continuing the tea trade with Britain. The British solved the problem by smuggling Indian opium to China.
In the 18th century, hundreds of thousands of Chinese became addicted to opium. And being the rulers of Indian state of Bengal, the British knew the soil of Bengal and some other Indian states was suitable for poppy cultivation.
They forced Indian farmers to grow opium, and then they would transport Indian opium to China to their warehouses in the free trade region of Canton and sell it to Chinese smugglers. The silver and gold they received from opium smuggling would then be used to buy Chinese tea, which they would sell in Europe at a profit.
Opium smuggling was a great source of revenue for the British East India Company, but the opium business was so hugely exploitative and coercive that it ended up impoverishing Indian peasants and had an impact on the lives of about 10 million Indian farmers and workers.
In order to increase opium's production, the British East India Company formed an opium agency which employed 2,500 clerks working in 100 offices. The agency fixed stiff production targets and monitored poppy farmers, enforcing contracts and quality.
The agency's officials and the local landowners would force the farmers to grow poppy. The agency officials had police-like powers and would kidnap, arrest, and threaten farmers with destruction of crops, criminal prosecution, and jail if they refused to grow the crop.
In this thriving, state-run global trade, poppy exports increased from 4,000 chests per year at the beginning of the 19th century to more than 60,000 chests by the end of 19th century.
In 1839, the Chinese government took measures to curb opium addiction. The Chinese confiscated and destroyed more than 20,000 chests of opium that were stored in the warehouses of the British merchants at Canton and Guangzhou.
In retaliation, the British government in 1840 sent its warships to attack Chinese coastal cities. The British offensive went on for months, and despite a counter-attack by the Chinese, the British captured the Chinese city of Nanjing. A treaty was signed by the Chinese, and in August 1842, the British ended the war. According to the provisions of the treaty, China was forced to pay Britain a large indemnity and to give Hong Kong Island to British under a 100-year lease.
The Second Opium War was fought between the Chinese, the United Kingdom, and France from 1856 to 1860. Again, the European forces' modern military technology led to an easy victory over the Chinese forces. The Chinese government was compelled to legalize the opium trade.
By 1915, the opium trade with China had ended. After the Chinese government succeeded in stopping opium consumption by the Chinese. And only after that, Indian farmers got freedom from the slavery of opium and became free to grow any crop other than poppy. Jaibodh, can you please tell us the age-old Indian tradition related to opium consumption?
Oh, sure. The western part of the Indian state of Rajasthan has an age-old tradition of serving dodha post, a drink made from the leftover husk of the opium plant once its milk or poppy tears has been extracted. This custom is called riyan, an important part of any social function such as a birth, an engagement, a wedding, or a death. It also helps to forge friendships and end enmities. At an opium communion, the host asks the guest to lick a small dose of water dissolved opium from his palm for cementing the bond. Not partaking of the opium at such functions is considered an insult to the host. And even though opium is served as a part of this ceremony, cultivating, possessing, and trading opium is now illegal in India.
Shall we give the listener a Hindi phrase?
Oh, sure. Let's give them one. Here we go. What is the best time to visit India? It's translated as India mein ghoomne ka sabse achha samay kaun sa hai? I'll say it again slowly. Just repeat it with me. India mein ghoomne ka sabse achha samay kaun sa hai?
Now I'm going to say it again slowly. Just repeat it with me. India mein ghoomne ka sabse अच्छा समय कौन सा है? I'll say it again slowly. Just repeat it with me. इंडिया में घूमने का सबसे अच्छा समय कौन सा है?
We hope you have enjoyed this podcast. Did you know we have a Facebook page? That's right. All About India is on Facebook. We want to make a community where listeners can share stories and travel tips. Come, join us. Link is in the episode's description.
And make sure to subscribe our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or RSS so you'll never miss a show. While you are at it, if you found value in this show, we would appreciate a rating on iTunes, Spotify, etc.
You could also support the show on Patreon. Goodbye. Namaste.